the Cultural and Outdoor Resource Finance Division meeting will come to order. I welcome you all and thank you for coming and welcome any input that you are prepared to give to us. And encourage the committee members to feel confident to openly discuss anything that's a request to discuss today, because this is your big chance. The first item of on the agenda is a continuation from the last committee meeting where we started and had committee discussion on an instruction on the definition of public law chapter 172 for the definition for protect, restore, and enhance. At our September 8th meeting, we heard from DNR Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer and Lafarge Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council Executive Director Bill Becker on their observations about the definitions of enhance, protect, and restore that were in the bill as passed last session. And in the bill, as with the definitions were in the bill that came through the Environment Policy and the Environment Finance Committee, as well as our committee. And we heard their observations about where the different definitions were placed in statutes or, and their subject content. We appreciated their feedback. We want to continue today to hear from members of the public or some organizations who want to comment. And in your packet is a letter from, which I received from David Zettner from many organizations, I think over 40 organizations, or Isaac Walton Nature Conservancy, Friends of Minnesota Valley, Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance, Anglers for Habitat, Audubon, Minnesota, Conservation Minnesota, Citizens for Clean Minnesota River, New Ulm Area Sport Fishermen, Minnesota Conservation Federation, Harvey Nelson Individual, Sportsmen for Change, Conservation Fund, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, Minnesota Waterfowl Association, Minnesota Muskie Alliance, Minnesota Trappers Association, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Friends of Advanced Anglers Association, Minnesota Dark Horse Anglers, Dark House Anglers Association, Minnesota Duck and Goose Callers Association, Land of Lake Bow Fishing. Minnesota of Lake, Land of Lake Bow Fishing Association, Lake Country Retriever Club, North American Bear Foundation, Safari Club International, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever. And in that letter, they say, as you begin discussions about policy changes to the Outdoor Heritage Fund and Lafarge Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, the undersigned groups want to express our high level of interest in your proceedings. As principal organizations in the conservation community that have worked diligently on passage and implementation of the legacy amendment, we are obliged to ensure the public that supported this measure has their expectations met. We believe that all efforts to change policies related to the fund and to the council must be undertaken with a sincere intention to improve the delivery of conservation that was overwhelmingly approved by the voters in 2008. To that end, we offer the following two suggestions for your consideration. First, The 2009 legislative session ended with a flurry of changes and commitments to propose definitions of protect, enhance, and restore. At the close, you committed to fixing the several problems with definitions as passed. We ask that you honor that commitment by making the appropriate language changes early in the session. We believe there is good understanding of the issues and acceptable proposals that many groups made during the conference committee process, but would welcome the chance to meet with you if those needs to be made more clear. Second, we would encourage you and your committee to seek and follow the guidance provided by the Department of Natural Resources on any policy language that affects these definitions or other conservation issues. The DNR has immense intellectual competence in the management of the state's natural resources and should be your first stop for insight into policies and programs. As was evidenced by last year's outcomes, seemingly minor changes can sometimes render entire natural resource programs inoperable. This can be readily avoided by first seeking their counsel. We hope you will seriously consider these requests. We are very interested in following the workings of your committee and welcome any chance we might have for input. Thank you for your consideration. Chair. Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. This is quite a bizarre letter. If you look at it here, I think they just have it a little bit backwards here. We're supposed to seek the counsel of the DNR. I was under the assumption that they're supposed to seek our counsel. Last I looked, the people that voted for this also voted for us and gave us election certificates to make decisions. I think this is just totally backwards here. We encourage you and your committee to seek and follow the guidance provided by the DNR. Have they lost their minds, or is it just, am I missing something here? The day that I go to see counsel from the DNR is the day that, so I think that this letter is very poorly written and has things just upside down. And also, Madam Chair, what did you commit to fix?
Representative Davis, in the chaos of the last day of the conference committee and the last day of session, as a matter of fact, at the end hour, as in respect to the definitions of protect, restore, and enhance in the bill that passed House Bill 1231, I said on the floor of the House of Representatives and read into the minutes of the conference committee report, I said, it was the third point, the definitions of protect, restore, and enhance in this bill will be reviewed and discussed by the members of the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee, the House Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee, and the Senate Committees related to Environment and Natural Resources, along with the Outdoor Heritage Council in the 2009-2010 interim. And I'm reading from the same paper that I read from on that day in May.
Okay. I guess for the record, I guess, you know, these groups are fine groups here. I'm sure everyone's a fine group, and we'll certainly listen to their suggestions, but I think they have it just backwards, Madam Chair. I think they're going at it just absolutely the wrong way.
The representatives, they are interested in the proceedings of our committee, and they are well-respected groups across the state, and individuals work very, very hard for the amendments to be passed, along with many Minnesotans, and they were very influential, and so we don't want to slam the door on anybody's opinion, and so we would like to hear as much as possible about or we'd like to receive their input as much as possible.
And Madam Chair, I thank you for that, and I certainly agree with that. I mean, every citizen, every group certainly has every right to sit right at that table and let us know what their suggestions are. And I would certainly encourage them to do that, but I think that that we're just going to turn this over to DNR is a bit outrageous in my mind as to what the letter suggests here, unless I'm not reading it correctly. And again, I want all the public input we can possibly have. These are very important issues. And, of course, now things passed. Everybody was a deciding vote that passed this. I understand that. But I think that they're just... I don't think they're a bit skewed. I think they're just totally backwards on how this thing should work. But we certainly want their suggestions.
And we do have, I think we'll find out a little bit later that the testimony that Mr. Meyer presented at the committee last week on the definitions were, the suggestions were incorporated into the guidelines that Representative Morgan is going to present a little bit later. And we certainly do welcome DNR's input on how what we said is, like this letter says, sometimes one word or confuse something. And we certainly have to have cooperation with the DNR about so that we know how our language affect them carrying out the other statutes and their work on other statutes. Thank you, Representative Davis. Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, maybe a clarifying question following up on Representative Davis. So what you just read in terms of the commitment you committed for input and discussion and hearing during the interim, the letter says you committed to fixing problems. But I hear in what you read on the floor a commitment for input and listening and discussion during the interim. Is that correct?
I said the definition to protect, restore, and enhance in this bill, meaning 1231. Will be reviewed and discussed by members of the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee, the House Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee, and the Senate Committees related to Environment and Natural Resources, along with the Outdoor Heritage Council in the 2009-2010 interim. And Representative Saxon, this was also his commitment. Or, I mean, Senator. So, on the definitions of protect, restore, and enhance, Minnesota Chapter 172, Jim Lyons.
Madam Chairman, can you hear?
Yes.
Council members or representatives, my name is Jim Lyons. I live in Robbinsdale, and I'm a citizen of Minnesota, period. I have no organization or anything that I'm supporting except myself. I came when you had your previous discussion about this and told you that I knew what protect, enhance, and restore meant. And my wife told me I was right.
I'm okay, adjourned.
Anyway, I read your document, your draft. I think it's a great idea, and I appreciate all the work that you put into it. And on page 3, you have put in here a definition of enhance, protect, and restore. First of all, let me proceed these remarks with just some thoughts since your last meeting. At the present time, you've allocated about 4% of the funds for the 25 years. And presently, I'm not sure we've seen any real results of what that allocation has done. And I wonder if by these definitions, you're somehow limiting the scope of what the committee can do in the future. Because I look back at the last 25 years and I tell myself, well, laptops didn't exist, the internet didn't exist, and iPhones didn't exist 25 years ago. There windmills for electrical generation 25 years ago, the biggest windmill I ever saw was on a farm pumping water. Ethanol is another product. And by the way, my grandfather, who went to jail for producing moonshine down in southern Minnesota, would be happy that we're now able to produce billions of gallons of moonshine at the taxpayer's expense. Some of the other things that I know have occurred in the last 25 years, milfoil is one. My boat gets taken out of Minnetonka every year, checked for milfoil. I don't know if it's done any good, but we have the problem. Zebra mussels, I know, are a problem over on the St. Croix and possibly up in Lake Superior in that vicinity, and they have their own set of problems.
Pipe, right?
There you go. Yeah. So these are natural problems that are occurring, and are these definitions wide enough in scope to support these kind of problems that have occurred in the previous 25 years that are likely to occur in the next 25? And the resources that you have available, can they be moved sufficiently to respond to those? I know there's talk about the jumping catfish in over in Illinois. Is that going to reach us, and are these resources going to be available, or under these definitions, will that particular kind of problem be able to be addressed with these funds? Yeah. Also, we've got the ash borer tree problem right now. Dutch elm disease was the hot topic, I recall, 25 years ago. Are these definitions flexible enough to provide that kind of support as we go forward? In the definitions that are on page 3, enhance has the word ecological value. I'm not sure how to define what an ecological value is. Is it a 0 to 1, a high to low, good to bad? Also under protect, we have healthy ecosystem. I'm not sure I can define an unhealthy one. And also in restore, high quality ecosystem. I'm not sure I'd know what a low quality one is. And I'm not sure what the quantifiables are for these definitions, that they make it any different than what the Webster Dictionary refers to as enhance, protect, and enforce, or how to expand these definitions to cover those topics of long term. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lance Smith.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon,
members of the committee. My name is Lance Smith. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance, as well as the president of a new group called Anglers for Habitat, and a member of the dedicated funding working group, which the letter was just referred to a few minutes ago. I guess that's what happens when 40 people try to write a letter, so I'll explain it that way. We also have a letter from my group, the Fish and Wildlife Alliance, which I would like to read, and then I would stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Oh, okay. And it's in our packet.
It should be in your packet, yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the committee, per your request for comments on the proposed definitions for protect, enhance, and restore language, we support the current definitions adopted by the SARD SAMS Outdoor Heritage Council, and we would urge your committee to adopt these definitions as well. We are very concerned that the definitions of protect, enhance, and restore will be broadened and will result in expenditures from the funds that are not and were not intended. The definitions should be precise and finite, like a focus, like a laser beam. to specific projects and goals that will result in the intended outcomes that the citizens of Minnesota voted upon. We are concerned that there will be attempts to divert these funds for other purposes by broadening the definitions. We ask that your committee discuss these definitions and they take into consideration the 10-year debate that went over this issue, that its primary purpose was to protect, enhance, and restore fish and wildlife habitat, land and water conservation. No other purpose was intended. We urge you to hold true to the will of the people that voted for this amendment and honor their vote. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ness, in your letter on the first paragraph, there's a part of the sentence, will be brought in will result in expenditures from the funds that are and were not intended. What would a possible example of that be? How do you feel it's being broadened, and what type of expenditure might be made that you don't think should be made?
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, we would take into account history, Representative Davis, and this happened in the Environmental Trust Fund. The definitions were broadened. The Environmental Trust Fund was used for other purposes than we thought originally was intended. We are concerned that this may happen here again. It has not happened yet. We are concerned
Madam
that it may.
Madam Chair, Mr. Ness, what are you talking about? What are you concerned about, and what is a possible unintended consequence?
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, we don't know. That is why we are concerned. We don't know that if you will expand the definition, what will the other purposes be used for?
So, Madam Chair and Mr. Ness, we don't know why we're concerned about what we shouldn't be concerned about.
We are concerned of the current language that is being proposed, Representative Davis, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Mr. Ness, the current language being proposed, how does that broaden anything? What could be a possible consequence of the broadened language?
Madam Chair. Representative Davis, I'll refer to this paper that was just discussed just a minute ago about the revised statutes and the language in there. For example, under the item protect, it says maintain active and healthy ecosystems. We don't know what that means.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Ness, what's your definition?
Our definition is we would prefer the Vassard SAM's outdoor heritage definitions, which are listed at the lower portion of the page.
Which page, Madam Chair?
Okay.
And Madam Chair, on that point, we're just not sure again what the word active means. Is there a lazy ecosystem or an inactive ecosystem? We don't understand the word. What is it in there for? So that's why we're questioning the definition. And we are concerned about the broadening of this. We're also afraid there may be other amendments as this bill goes through the legislature, that other representatives have other ideas and may amend the definition. That is our concern.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Under the Outdoor Heritage Council definition of protect, it appears that the definition would say that the money can be spent only in one way, through acquisition of fee title or conservation easement, that is the sum total of what protecting would mean. And I would venture to, I'd almost bet somebody on the Outdoor Heritage Council that if you went to the average voter who voted for that and said, Did that mean that we could only protect through acquisition of fee title or conservation easement, and they would give you a blank stare? So it sounds as though the Outdoor Heritage Council believes it is protecting something sacred that people voted on, but when I see through acquisition of fee title or conservation easement as the only way to protect, that is bewildering to me.
Mr.
Madam Chair, Representative Houseman, I believe much of that language is taken from the actual amendment. If you would read the amendment itself, which I'm sorry I do not have in front of me, that it says that the acquisition of land can be open to the taking of game and fish. I believe it reads something like that. And that is what I believe they are referring to.
No.
I don't see that as a definition here. It just simply says land acquired by fee must be open to the public.
And I believe that, that the Lasard Council took that to mean, under the auspices of Protect, that when you acquire through fears acquisition, it is to sustain game and fish.
Mr. Ness, when you worked on the campaign a lot, and any of the materials that you handed out, or when you were convincing voters, were there any brochures that said "Protect Equals Requires"?
Pardon me, say it again.
Were there any brochures or commercials or handouts or printed material when you were working on the campaign that "Protect Equals Requires"?
No, none that I recall, Representative Hanson.
Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a pointer, in reading the actual amendment that the people passed, it says land acquired by fee with money depositing outdoor heritage fund under this section. It refers to that, but it doesn't in any way say that's the only way you can do it.
And I, Representative David, Madam Chair,
and
I would agree with that statement.
Thank you.
Mr. Ness, do you have any comments to make on the comments that Mr. Lyon made about all the things that weren't in existence 25 years ago, and so would these definitions, the Sartan's definitions last for 25 years?
Madam Chair, I won't respond directly to Mr. Lyon's comments. I don't know Mr. Lyon. In answer to roughly your questions about will these things take into occurrence for other things we haven't seen yet, it's our hope that they will. We don't know. We're looking into a glass ball into the future to determine what's ahead. To us, many of us, land conservation and water conservation, and particularly water conservation at this point, seems highly threatened. We have exotic species entering our systems. We have even viral diseases that are affecting fish, not to mention the Asian carp problem that Mr. Lyons mentioned. Other things, emerald bass borer was mentioned. Several things. These are things, again, we have no control over and that we will have to address. Whether that's addressed by you, the legislature, or by the Lasard Sam's Council is an issue yet to be decided. Their goal is somewhat finite. Yours is a broad spectrum of Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative
Loeffler. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Ness, I'm always perplexed by the people who think they know exactly what the voters had in mind when they voted on this, because even though I've knocked on 15,000 doors, I don't know that I know what every one of those doors but was thinking as they went into the booth, although you know, you do engage in a lot of conversations. And I do feel like in the messaging that went out before people made the decision and as in the debates that took place, it was really a much broader presentation of, you know, protecting and preserving the legacy of Minnesota, the things you love most about Minnesota. And at least in my constituency, and maybe it's because I don't represent an area that has active hunting and fishing grounds within its borders, although you could catch things in the Mississippi River, you don't usually eat them, you just do it for sport. You know, and so I don't have the kind of associations that are active in some other areas that other people do. Most people seem to be taking it more in terms of protecting it from pollution, from degradation of the kind of habitat that sustains wildlife, that sustain, you know, prevents waters from being polluted. And if we had intended, or if the public had intended, or whoever was putting together the materials and sponsors of this had intended it to be about protecting land from development, then I think we would have seen a campaign and the public would have interpreted the way I think it's Dakota County and Washington County have had referendums in which they've actually increased their property taxes to specifically do that, to go out and buy land and protect it from development. And that wasn't the discussion that I heard at all. And so I'm always a little mystified about this is the only way we can do it, and this is what was the understanding. And maybe that was the understanding amongst the core group that helped get this ball rolling down the hill. But it's like all of us who've authored bills, sometimes you start with one idea and a whole bunch of amendments get put on, and all of a sudden, in order to have the ownership to pass it through the legislature, it has to be a much more expansive bill with a lot of visions, state people's visions brought together to get the votes needed. And I think that was the same thing with this. In order to get the broader public to voluntarily raise their taxes, you know, it had to have something that had a broader vision. And so I personally was totally surprised when I got put on this committee and saw this very narrow definition of land acquisition because and conservation easement acquisition, because that just hadn't been part of the discussion when I was supporting it and putting it in my literature and talking to people about it. And so I think it's hard for all of us to kind of know exactly what the public saw, but I think if we really wanted a very narrow, specific outcome, we should have been much clearer in the communication of that.
I'm not sure what the question was, but I'll...
I'm just making a statement. I'm sorry, you just happened to be there, but I just really want to say, I'm reacting to the fact that everyone who comes before us and writes to us says they know what the public intended, and I just guess I wanted to be on the record that I think I know what a small, what some portion of the public in my little part of the world was thinking as they talked with me. And it didn't reflect that narrowness of the things that I saw happening in Dakota and Washington County, which were much more focused towards this definition.
Madam Chair, I'll just make a quick comment in response. Having worked in this campaign since it started, you know, as we looked across our state, we look at what we think is one of the crown jewels in all the United States. We have such a great state from the north to the south and the east to the west. But we're worried that our water is becoming polluted. You mentioned the Mississippi River. And that's one of the key factors here. What are we going to do about our water quality? If the water that has been tested to date is 40% of it comes back as polluted, then still Texas tells us that 60% is not. What are we doing to protect the 60%? So we need to have some protections in mind as well. So when you consider that portion of protect, I hope you consider that as well. We're losing our forest. We never imagined that the forest would be sold off en masse. They're selling the forest off en masse. A foreign company now owns most of our forest. Tabletop farmers are telling me they're losing tabletop farmland being developed every day. And also being squished by the loss of wetlands and marginal lands. So they're losing that too. So there are great stresses put on our state, and which in turn reflect our economy and as well as our future generations. We feel that a kid growing up today should be able to go out and catch a fish and eat it. He should be able to swim in the lake, and he should be able to drink the water as well. That was our hope.
A good reminder, Mr. Nick. Thank you. And that foreign company owns the carbon credits and the wetland credits forever now, too. Mr. Nash, thank you for offering your testimony today. And you said that in your opening remarks that you're also a member of Anglers for Habitat. What is that? Yeah. You said it was a new group. So it's a new group from another group, or
no, ma'am.
A new intent, or
Madam Chair, you at the DNR roundtable, which will be held in the very first week of January, we'll be making a presentation to the roundtable about the new group that has been formed. For many years, there have been groups such as Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, Minnesota Waterfowl, so on and so forth. They provide habitat assistance by raising funds in a nonprofit world to help restore wetlands, buy prairies, restore forests, things like that. But there has never been a fish group that does that type of activity. So we have formed a fish group called Anglers for Habitat that will run along parallel lines of Ducks Unlimited and Pheasants Forever, raising money in a nonprofit fashion to help lakeshore repairs, well, rivers and stream repairs, perhaps stocking fish, perhaps doing other improvements to lake and underwater, what we call the underwater forest, the vegetation under the water, which none of us see, because we don't see under the water. We assume that it's all just fine. There's no indication that's still fine. It's being invaded by other types of invasive species, whether it's Eurasian milfoil or curly pontail or other types of things. And so we're concerned that still things are happening. So we thought we'd organize a group and become a 501c3 and raise money to help combat those types of issues. And I just happened to get elected president.
Oh, my goodness. Mr. President.
And when this comes out after the roundtable, I would be glad to furnish your committee with more information on Anglers for Habitat. We're very excited about it.
Thank you.
We're having a little logo contest right now, too, if anyone would like to enter a logo contest. There's a $50... There's a $50 Cabela's gift certificate as the top prize.
Oh. Very good. Any other questions for Ms. Smith? Thanks, Representative.
Well, in light of his other position, Madam Chair, I guess I would just want to know, would you assume the only way to protect habitat for fishing would be through acquisition of fee title or conservation? That's all you'd need. That is all you'd need to do, and that habitat would be protected.
Madam Chair,
nothing else.
Representative, to an extent, not completely, but to an extent.
But
yes.
See, this doesn't say not completely.
I understand.
Your
that?
Definition doesn't say not completely.
Representative Hausman, and in addition to that, we would also look at the Clean Water Fund. We think that those two should be used to help restore lakes and rivers and streams as well. And Madam Chair, again, I think that as you look at those definitions, that is just the Lessard, SAM's outdoor heritage definition. It is not the definitions for clean water, which you folks are going to be discussing.
Representative, good evening.
Just let me apologize for being late. I had a dentist appointment. You know how they go sometimes. I didn't expect to be this late. I think I hear you saying that for the purposes of one sentence in the Constitution, protect should be have two different definitions. So protecting wetlands, forests, prairies, and habitat would have one definition, and protecting lakes, rivers, and streams would have another definition?
And Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, that is the reason for the hearing today, is to discuss these definitions and what they mean. And getting back to this, the way I read this application is that you are, if I read the top of this, these definitions of enhance, protect, and restore in Section 82.04 apply to all funds appropriated and the purposes authorized under the Clean Water Fund, the Parks and Trails Fund, and the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So this definition will apply to all three of those funds. I believe that's correct.
Representative Genius.
But the follow-up would be if you were to use the definition of protect, and I think this is where Representative Towson was leading us. If you use the definition of protect to mean only purchase, then the only way we could protect lakes, rivers, and streams would be to purchase them.
Madam Chairman, Representative Wiegand, back to the problem with water, let's put it that way. Usually the problem with water is something that occurs on the land and therefore goes into our water stream. If we were to protect shorelands with buffers, streams and rivers with buffers, we would reduce, and I'll say reduce, some of the pollution and some of the problems that are going into the water. That has to happen on the land. In order for that to happen, you may have to acquire the land in order to protect it, or do an easement with the landowner so that they can protect the land.
Representative Zena.
I understand that argument, but is that the only way we can spend those dollars, or can we continue to spend money for wastewater treatment, for example?
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I don't believe wastewater treatment was considered. I believe this was considered to be natural bodies of water, lakes, rivers, and streams, and that wastewater treatment is to be something to be decided by the legislature under its auspices as an overall state problem.
question. I'm having trouble. Can I speak to this?
You may. That's Virginia.
Suggesting to us that the new clean water mines to protect lakes, rivers, and streams can be used for acquisition, and I would agree that that's one of the uses, but it cannot be used for things like, or should not be used for things like wastewater treatment.
Madam Chair, Representative Genius, I believe in the discussions with the groups that supported the amendment, that was not part of the discussion. The discussion was, again, natural lakes, rivers, and streams.
So the protection is limited to purchasing when it comes to lakes, rivers, and streams. That's the only thing that you believe the legislature can do with the money.
Madam Chair, Representative Gina, that is part of the solution. There may be other things we actually do within the body of water that may, for example, we may find something that will remove purple loosestrife or Eurasian water milfoil. We don't know that yet. Studies are ongoing. People are searching all the time for a solution for those things. There may be something we actually do within the water. Who's going to pay for that? Perhaps the Clean Water Fund. Perhaps there will be an appropriation from the legislature. That remains to be unseen yet. But just the acquisition or easement is not the only thing. It is one of the tools to be used, or two of the tools to be used to help clean our water and protect our lakeshore.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ness, I was thinking back to the old television show Dragnet, and at the end they had a badge, I think it said to protect and serve. And you know, we're talking about the word protect here. And when I think of protect, I think it's about enforcement. I think there's regulations. I think there's a variety of tools in the toolbox. But I guess back in that old Dragnet show, we'd have to change that now in 2009 to say acquire and serve, if that's what protect is. Protect is only acquire. That's the only tool we have, and that's what I believe the letter that Representative Murphy or Chair Murphy said, if we use the definitions that protect equals acquire across the fund, then that does not mean that we can use it for Emerald Ash Forest or Asian Carp or enforcement of existing laws or additional enforcement of laws or any other type of thing. It would only mean acquire. And I don't think if you stopped 100 people on the street that they would say that protect equals acquire. I think they would think it means protect, like in the old Dragnet show, protect and serve.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen.
Can ask.
I would agree with your definition of the extent of protect. The protect may be through regulation, maybe through other types of enforcement. Again, that's up to the legislature to enact laws, to pass statutes, which then require someone to enforce them, and which may then fall into the term protect. If they're enforcing a environmental regulation that is being broken or violated, they would need some type of enforcement action, and that may cause protection of the resource.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Ness, would that mean protecting the acquisition through enforcement, enforcing the acquisition in the terms of an easement, or the fee title to make sure that there are dollars there to make sure the boundaries aren't plowed up, that there's not encroachment creeping in, that the invasive species don't come into it, those things?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, usually in my experiences is that when an acquisition is performed, those boundaries are laid out. There's a real estate plan that goes in and someone surveys the land and a legal description is planted. Whether the action that happens on that land changes is unknown, I guess, at this point. If the land was already had, let's say, purple loosestrife on it, perhaps there would be plans to eradicate the purple loosestrife, to get rid of it. That doesn't mean it doesn't transfer across the fence line to the next property.
Representative Virginia.
Thank you. I think I
I'm still confused about your position on the water portion of protect lake surface and streams. One of the things we spent money on this last year was the test water. That isn't restoration, that isn't enhancement. We did it under the auspices of protecting. Do you think that we need to use some other pot of money to do the testing of our waters? It was the general testing, and then we did some testing for endocrine disruptors. So we did more than one kind of testing, but we did testing.
Madam Chair, Representative Genius, I would have to ask a question back to you. How much money was used to protect any existing lakes or rivers or streams? Or was all the money used for testing alone?
We used part of the money for testing. We used part of the money for wastewater treatment. We had lots of different things we did. My question is, by confining protect to mean only purchase, that means that for the future, we could not use the Clean Water Fund to do, for example, the testing of the water. And that seems to be your position, and I'm just trying to clarify and make sure I understand it.
Mr. Mayor.
Madam Chairman, Representative Bouguinia, back to the definition again. The definition that my group, Fish and Wildlife Alliance, is preferring through the Lathard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, not the Clean Water Fund, through the Lathard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, is the definitions that they have come to. We think those are just fine definitions for them to operate under. Okay? For the rest of the funds, that seems to be kind of up in the air. See, there isn't another Lathard Sam's Council for the clean water portion. And we think there is some consternation and confusion among folks of where to go to for a clean water project. There is no council to approach. Where do they go? Where do they seek their project? And who do they approach? And that's becoming a concern as well. Back to your question about acquisition and easement again. If it happens on the land and that helps improve the water quality, then that is a good purpose of protecting. But in the same token, if we have acid rain or pollution that settles in from another state and its power plant, that is something that is not going to happen on the land. That happens through the air and will come down in rain and affect our water as well. So there are questions about that as well. So when you say that you used a certain portion for testing, it seemed to a lot of us looking from the outside that a lot of it went towards testing. Not much went toward protecting the current lakes that aren't polluted, that aren't in jeopardy. And so our question raises again, if 40% are polluted, and that tells us that 60% are not, what are we doing to protect the 60% that are not?
Representative Kenia.
That's an excellent question, and I hope we do get some proposals from the agencies about protecting from degradation, because I believe that's one of the things we should be doing, but we didn't get those proposals.
Madam Chair, back to the creation of anglers for habitat, so that we can formulate projects to bring to your attention.
Can I come back to my basic worry?
Representative Virginia.
When you have the word protect in one sentence in the Constitution, and you're asking us to have a definition that's very narrow in one part, I don't think we can ask the court to say, oh, but for another part, protect means something entirely different. It's just that will not fly in a court. So I think that's one of the reasons why all of this issue comes up about what does protect mean when it comes to water, like surface materials.
Madam Chair, Representative Vigenius, back to Representative Hansen's talk about Dragnet and the badge and protect and serve. Some of that protection, again, that he mentioned, isn't that a protection that is really up front first? That you kind of stop the bad things from happening before they get to the good things? So I understand your concern about legality, and that's why you have staff and legal staff on your committee here to help render those types of legal ramifications. But again, back to the definition of protect, through fee acquisition and or fee acquisition or enhance or easement, we think, again, those are specifically designed to go towards the land and the problems that come off the land and into the water.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ness. We may talk again.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Your insights were very helpful.
Members of the committee, and I wish you all a happy holiday.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wants to address protect, restore, and enhance definition at this time? Thank you. The second item on the agenda is the legislative guidelines that's been in the works for several months now, and Representative Morgan was the chair of the Legislative Guidelines Committee, and so at this time, Representative Morgan.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you once again for volunteering me to be the chair of this subcommittee. I want to thank all of the staff members, both nonpartisan and GOP and DFL staff members who helped out in the preparation of this draft of the legislative guide. Without your help, as always, we'd be nowhere. I also want to thank the organizations. I believe there were at least 13 of them who submitted proposals, recommendations, suggestions, however you want to describe them, for inclusion in the legislative guide. We did our best to include at least something from everyone. Some folks were very, very focused and specific in their recommendations. Some folks took a broader view and a broader brush look at the legislative guide, and we appreciate all of that input. I also want to thank Representative Hawes for his contributions. Much as the chair volunteered me, I sort of volunteered him, and he's not able to be here today. He's back at home in his district, but I want to thank him for his input as we work to put this legislative guide together. The purpose of the legislative guide was outlined in statute in House File 1231. From Section 8 of Article 5, it says, "The legislative guide shall be recommended, stating principles for the use and expected outcomes of all funds from the dedicated sales tax pursuant to the Minnesota Constitution, Article 11, Section 15. Specifically, down at the end of Section 8, it says, "The legislative guide required by this section shall be for the years 2010, 2015, and shall include the following provisions. Number one, principles by which to guide future expenditures for each fund. Number two, desired outcomes for the expenditures. Number three, a general statement applicable to later years for these funds. And number four, consideration of financial methods, such as revolving loan funds, that may be used in future appropriations." We used the statutory guidelines here to help us in developing the structure and the format for the legislative guide. Of course, we also used the principles we had adopted last year as a committee unanimously last March to help us in developing the legislative guide. You've all received copies of the guide, I believe copies are available or will soon be available for members of the public. As we continue to work through this process, we want and need more feedback. We've put some flesh on the skeleton provided by the statute by House File 1231, last section, Chapter 172, last session. We want more input. We need more input. One of the things the chair and I both agree is that the legislative guide is a little too long right now. We tried to be more inclusive than less inclusive. At times we obviously had to deal with some contradictory recommendations, and so we tried to be internally consistent at least within the document. And we think we did a very good job of being inclusive, but we believe we need to do a better job of being more focused, of being perhaps clearer, and just doing a better job of representing the work of this committee over the course of the last 11 months. So that's a general outline of the work that went into this. I'm happy to answer any questions. We're here primarily today for member comments. I believe there will be time for public comments at a later date, but there certainly will be time for public feedback on this. Let me double-check my notes here. I worked with Committee Administrator Nancy Conley, and we would like to... The statutory date for getting this done is January 15 of 2010. We are hopefully going to have another committee hearing on or around that time period. I'll be working with the chair to set that up. We would like to have feedback from public, feedback from folks here in the audience by the end of December, so in the next couple of weeks. That will help us as we work on a follow-up draft or perhaps a actual something we can act on as a group once session begins. But I guess right now I would like to open it up to comments from members who've had a chance to read. Perhaps some of your comments may be directed to the section on the what we just discussed with the feedback on the definitions of restore, protect, and enhance, or perhaps on other sections that may have been included or perhaps have not been included that you would like us to reconsider. So with that, I would open up to questions or comments from members.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morgan, just a couple of points I'd like to get clarified. On page 4, the bottom, groundwater and drinking water recharge areas may be acquired through permanent easement or fee title acquisition for the purpose of preventing, reducing, or eliminating contamination. Does this imply the possible use of money from this legacy fund for eminent domain?
Madam Chair, that's a good question. It's one that had not occurred to me when I first saw that. So thank you for pointing that out. The person who suggested, who made this recommendation, Representative Hansen, is not in the room right now. Perhaps when he returns, you could ask that again, and maybe he has some better sense of that. But I certainly will put it in a note, and we'll discuss it as we continue to revise.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative,
Representative Morgan, I appreciate that. I think that's something that we do need to have clarified, and I'm kind of back and forth with another meeting here, so if Representative Hansen comes back in, perhaps someone else will ask that. Also on page 5, in the under arts and cultural heritage principles, the 1, 2, 3, the third point down, I'll just read the beginning of it. In the latter case, funds will be allocated strategically to provide guidance on how to set up market and manage endowments and so on in that paragraph. Are we implying here, or are we making some recommendation about earmarking in perpetuity? And one of the things that we did talk about last session was that because a group or a organization is given money this time, doesn't mean that they should expect it forever. And just wondering if that is the intent there, or what the implication is here.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, thank you for pointing that out. I think clearly, and perhaps Ms. Conley can help me with finding those, where it's located in here, we took to heart recommendations, specific recommendations about that. And clearly that was part of our investment goals this year, that we are not, there's no perpetuity implied with any year's particular appropriations. I think the idea here is that hopefully the appropriations we make are for projects or ideas or concepts that are really grand and worthwhile. And hopefully, we know that this fund has a finite lifetime, 25 years. So hopefully we will be appropriating them in such a way, I think the guide is suggesting that they will be appropriated in such a way that the perpetuation of the purpose for those things could be taken care of even when this funding is no longer there, either because the 25-year period has ended or because the following year or the following biennium we've decided to allocate those E funds in a different way.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair?
Representative Erdahl.
I think Representative Hansen has been filled in on my question. Would you care to answer that, please?
Representative Hansen, eminent domain?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl is not intended to be eminent domain. In the Clean Water Fund appropriation last time, we provided, maybe Baltic Department has provided at least $2 million for voluntary willing landowners to voluntarily enter into groundwater recharge area section 3. So it was not in the domain.
Anyone else? For that, as you were reading through the guidelines, did you find something in here that you especially like or especially don't like? That you want to share? They love it.
Apparently, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davis?
And Trustee Morgan, is there any place in here where it says that we have to do what the DNR says? I don't see it.
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, I, like the Chair, appreciate the input of all the different agencies and groups that have a stake in the expenditures of these funds and in the resources in the state of Minnesota that the voters voted to support with these constitutional amendment dollars. So I think we value their input, and we appreciate the role that all of the advocacy groups and the state agencies had to play in making sure that these funds are used to the best benefit of the Minnesota taxpayers.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Morgan. I appreciate the suggestions also.
Members of the committee, on page 3, under Parks and Trails Principles, bullet 1, 2, 3, 4. First line, grants funded by the Parks and Trails Fund. Insert the D after fund.
That's so fun. I thought they were writing about Greenleaf.
Madam Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I want to direct in response to Representative Erdahl's question from earlier, Ms. Conley has pointed out to me the location of the principal to guide those decisions. If you look on page 2, it's about the middle. It's the third bullet point up from where it says Outdoor Heritage Principles. So it's under the category of Principles for All Funds. The third bullet point up says, decisions about how best to allocate the funds will be reassessed on a regular basis and will adapt as needs and opportunities change. The legislature shall adopt a schedule for review of each fund on a rotating basis. The next bullet point says, multi-year commitments of funds cannot exceed a two-year biennium, and no portion shall be used to repay bonds or other long-term obligations of a capital nature. Thank you.
Representative Mass.
I just had a question for clarification purposes on page 5, the second bullet under arts and cultural. As I read through this, a lot of these seem to be have, you know, guidelines for action taken or what the committee will do in making decisions. And I am not picking up on a particular action. I'm wondering if that's just a statement, and at that it seems to be a bit of a vague statement. I'm wondering, you know, local identity, some of the words in there, I'm trying to figure out exactly what that guideline is asking of the committee or is providing as a guideline for the committee.
What bullet are you
under? The second bullet under arts and cultural heritage principles. I just was looking for clarification on what that's getting at exactly in terms of a guideline.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mack, as I remember correctly, that was a recommendation from the arts community, I believe it was the arts board, that submitted that. So I'm going to try to give you a secondhand answer to that, and perhaps at a later time we can have them come down and help answer that question. My reading of what the arts board and the arts community tried to suggest and recommend to this legislative guide was we shouldn't just look at the products that we are purchasing, perhaps, when it comes to art and culture, that there are intangible pieces of our heritage. I think one of the things we invested in this last time was the language, the preservation of the native languages for our some of the tribes in the state. So I think that generally is what I read it to have something to do with, just to make sure that we are thinking of things not just as a product, but as a as the intangible cultural heritage of our state.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just on page 3, under Parks and Trails Principles, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth bullet down, just similar to what you were doing with fun or fund, the third line down, includes the logo developed by the Commission of Natural Resources, or do we want Commissioner?
Yes, we
do. Commissioner?
Although I don't think he's going to be blind. You're going to
tell us
our
logo going to be? Commissioner Brickle. Thank you. Representative Tarkleton. Thank you, Madam Chair. In the clean water section, in a number of spots, the term enforcement appears, and I'm curious as to just what the authors have in mind when they speak about enforcement. Are we going to form our own little private committee police force?
Water.
Or
Representative Morgan.
Yes, Representative Torkelson, I believe it would be Representative Murphy on horseback. thank you, Representative Torkelson. I believe, Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, it's referring to the statutory enforcement that's already in law. I don't think we are setting up any additional enforcement posse, if
I
you will.
I understand that, but the concept of enforcement, to me, isn't really included in the constitutional amendment. I don't think that is, at least as to my recollection. I'd have to review the language, but protect, enhance, and restore certainly is what we're interested in. Enforcement seems to me to be beyond the purview of these funds.
Representative Virginia. If you look at the Constitution for groundwater and for drinking water sources, there is no restore, enhance, just protect. I can't imagine that under those circumstances enforcement would be excluded.
What are we enforcing?
Pardon?
Just what are we enforcing? Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Well, we already have groundwater rules We have rules for statutes and rules for groundwater and for drinking water. The source protection, how you protect ground, there are rules in place for that.
Madam Chair, certainly I agree with that, and those rules were in place long before the constitutional amendment was passed, and it seems to me the enforcement of those rules is something that is already in place, and if this is not supposed to supplant efforts, I don't understand why we're including it in here.
Mr. Savardini,
the rules are in place, they're not being enforced. So anything we do at this point is not supplanting.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Parkinson, maybe to go back to my dragnet analogy, it didn't say suggestions or to educate or protection didn't equal suggestion or education. It's protect. And just that protect isn't only acquire. It's not just educate or suggest. My constituents, they had to do come into compliance with clean water requirements. They had to pay for wastewater treatment upgrades. They didn't have a choice. They weren't given voluntary best management practices to improve their wastewater. They had to do that, and they had to pay to come into compliance with clean water laws. And those are enforced. And so the additional enforcement of existing laws, I think, is clearly within the bounds of this definition of effect. And as members of the legislature, we voted on that in the statutory language that we passed in the legislation last year. Statutory guidance says that the funds can be used for compliance. Clean Water Legacy Funds were not compliant, but the constitutional funds that we passed said that we could talk about compliance and enforcement, and that was debated throughout the session.
Representative Sam Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 9, I guess, for Representative Morgan, I've got two questions, or I guess a question and a statement. The first would be on the second bullet. Our stewardship obligations matter delayed. A project that requires restoration, conservation, or careful stewardship should state those requirements in advance and fund them in advance. For example, if a painting is bought as a historical artifact, no delay in restoration of the painting should be tolerated for budget reasons. I don't quite understand what that means, or put off to another party. I'd just soon put it off to another party if we could, but I guess then you have to take into consideration that if you're accepting a donation of a painting or buying a painting, that you better have the money to. What does that mean?
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, very good question. It was expressed as we gathered input from folks that there were concerns about long-term obligations, and that if this money were going to be spent, that as many of those long-term obligations for whatever was being purchased were being accounted for up front and in the beginning, so that we wouldn't be passing off responsibilities onto other folks who didn't have input into the decisions, perhaps, that we were. We've heard this is kind of related, I guess, to some of the issues with the PILT, where we are buying state land, or we're buying land to make it state land, but now there are tax obligations that counties and townships and other parts of the state might be concerned about, and we are putting them in a tough position because of that. So I think this is a similar thing. If we are going to be spending this money, we absolutely should know up front what are the long-term obligations that come along with owning that painting, for instance, and not just, well, we can buy it for $600 now and we'll worry about those other costs later. No, we need to know up front what those other costs will be, so we are making an informed stewardship decision up front, and not setting somebody else up for a financial obligation that we are necessitating out of this fund.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Morgan. And then I just make a comment on the last bullet point on page 9.
have we identified ways to fund these obligations after 25 years? I don't know if that is really or should be the purpose of this committee, in that the constitutional amendment said for 25 years. I mean, anybody can discuss and decide things after the 25 years, but I don't know if it's the purview of this committee overseeing the 3/8 amendment that was passed by the people of the state on how to perpetuate it or to continue it. So I'm just a little concerned about how much time we would spend on, you know, when we're all sitting around this table and on this committee in 25 years, maybe we'll need to talk more about it then, but I don't know if that should be a concern of this committee at this point. But the kind of truth of the matter was to go for 25 years, mm-hmm. not to see how we can perpetuate forever.
But
just a comment.
But we have to protect our investment, Representative Davis.
We'll talk about that.
Good point, Representative Davis.
Anyone else? Representative House.
Madam Chair, I would say, you know, his first point, that little phrase about no delay in restoration of the painting should be tolerated for budget reasons, that doesn't quite say what Representative Morgan indicated. Maybe, I mean, the point is what you're saying, all costs should be quantified before we purchase so that we know what it is we're getting. That's what I heard you say. I think maybe a rewording there.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
To that point, I like Representative Morgan's description better than the way it's printed there. Maybe we can revise this.
Good point. Anyone else? Anything else that you really like? Anything you don't like? Going once. Next opportunity, as Representative Morgan said, we're asking all the people that just received this today and the people that will look at it online if they have additional corrections, comments, or want any kind of input into the legislative guide. You have till December 31st to submit in writing by email to Nancy Conley, Committee Administrator. And I'd like to introduce Charlotte Anson, who has won the job of taking care of our committee as a committee legislative assistant. And she also participated in the legislative guide, and we appreciate her talents a lot.
Did you warn her about late night meetings?
We warned her a lot. We said, please give me this job, because there's action here. So we welcome you. Anything else on the legislative guide? If not, Mr. Soderberg, I understand there were new numbers because there was a November forecast, and there's new budget appropriation numbers for the state as a whole, and there are new numbers for the funds. Mr. Soderberg, please update us on the November revenue forecast.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, I'm going to be working off just a one-page sheet that's in your pack, and I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but I will go through it briefly and just highlight a couple of the items. Before I get into the actual funds themselves, I'll just give you some background on what the overall forecast net for all the funds in total. Basically, for the biennium, looking at the biennium, the forecast for all the funds in total is about 1.55% down from what we had thought at the end of session. And that equates to about almost $7.5 million, $7,432,000. One thing to recognize, and something that will have an impact as we look at the funds, is that most of the impact is in the first year of the biennium. It's in the FY 2010. About 85 cents of each dollar of impact is in the first year. The second year is far less impact, which is to say that the expectations for receipts are more impacted in the first year. And so as you go through this, you'll see that effect in it. So I'll go into the sheet, but those are just kind of the highlights of what it is overall as we look through it. Looking at the sheet itself, I should explain EOS. Somebody asked me about that. That's end of session. That's what we thought we had, or what we, at that time, understood happening with the funds. The November forecast is a forecast that was just released just a couple weeks ago, just at the end of, or the first week in December. So if you look at the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and this will be consistent for all of them, but I'll speak to this one, and then you can look through the others. I'll probably speak a little bit to the Arts and Cultural Heritage, because I want to give you a heads up on some of the situations that exist around that fund. But looking at the Outdoor Heritage Fund, you can see that the appropriations obviously would be the same, since we haven't made any changes for both the end of session and in the November forecast. But it's the receipts for the forecast of receipts for the funds are down in the first year by $2,091,000, in the second year by $361,000. So the total receipts for the funds are down by about $2,452,000 from what we thought it would be. And what that means is that as we move forward, next month we'll be getting the recommendations from Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, and I believe they're meeting even this week to kind of start going through those recommendations and finalizing those recommendations, is they'll be just working with less money, and so they'll have to adjust their recommendations to reflect that they have less money, and kind of adjust as far as what they carry forward, you know, what they propose or recommend to the legislature, both for appropriations out of that fund next year, as well as the carry forward amount. The other funds, of course, have 2 years appropriations, so any adjustment will have to be made by the legislature in 2011. And I should tell you that these numbers are kind of preliminary because in February, at the end of February, of course, we'll be getting another forecast, and it could very well impact these funds. I think that if you look at the Clean Water Fund,
they all go out and buy stuff, though. In December now.
Madam Chair, I don't want to alarm anyone, but I want to give everybody a caution that we do know now what the receipts in November of this year were relative to the forecast that was just made. And they were down $20 million in that month alone. And so it's a pretty significant drop. But as I said, I don't want to alarm everyone, but I want you to at least be thinking about the fact that you may have to address some issues, both with looking forward as well as the current appropriations. Now, that could be that because we had a late Thanksgiving this year, there wasn't a whole lot of time after Thanksgiving for the traditional holiday shopping and that, but it does at least give some indication that this is flexible. I mean, the economy is still in a state of flux. There's no doubt about it. And so, as a committee, you just need to be thinking what you would recommend, how best to handle any circumstances that may come to pass as we go forward. The one that I did want to draw your attention to is the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. As you can see that the legislature has anticipated that there would be $1,762,000 on the bottom line after the first year of the biennium, and that would carry forward into the second year. That actually looks like it's going to be $509,000 now. So that will impact the fund so that instead of having what had thought to be a $1,780,000 balance after the end of the biennium, is now looked to be about $311,000. I guess a way to phrase it is pretty razor thin as to what it would mean. So that one, depending on how things go forward, if you're going to be, it'll probably be this fund more than the others that you'll have to make adjustments because you overcommitted the fund. The others would be, you know, because you just don't feel comfortable with the amount of reserve that's available. And I guess that's it, Madam Chair, and if anybody has any questions.
Madam Chair, this is very interesting to me, and one of the rumors out there on the circuit, and they may just be rumors, was that, in fact, that our MMB was, in a sense, upfronting cash already for some of the expenditures of, I don't know whether that would have been the Outdoor Heritage Commission, or as they voted, before the cash flow was even there. And so given these numbers, I would think we might want to express our concern to MMB that we certainly don't want to borrow from the general fund to upfront the money for acquisitions that are happening right now, if that is, in fact, occurring.
Mr. Chatterford?
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I can't speak to whether that is occurring. I wasn't aware of that. I did talk to Mike Roloff from Management Budget, and I think the biggest concern is with the Arts and Culture Fund, because there is such a razor thin one. I hadn't heard anything about the Outdoor Heritage Fund or the Clean Water
and
Fund.
And Madam Chair, the specific, and you know, this, I don't serve on it, and so I may not have my information correct, but this would have been some of the acquisition plans. Because obviously those have to be negotiated early, and, you know, do we in fact, before we acquire land, do we actually have to have some money in the bank, or is MMB...
Madam Chair, Helen has come to my rescue, and she says that there was an advance of $9
million. There was an advance of $9 million.
And I don't know that that may have been paid back by now, because we're, you know, within...
But wouldn't we think we ought not to be advancing any money that we don't have in a year like this? I mean, wouldn't that seem kind of...
The $9 million, that was Outdoor Heritage?
That was the, as I understand it, is this the Outdoor Heritage? The first page was all funds, and the Outdoor Heritage was $1 million. The Clean Water was $3.5 million. Likewise, with the Parks and Trails was $3 million, and the Arts and Cultural Heritage was $1.5 million. I'm sure, I don't think it's unusual, in Representative Hausman, that there would be an advance, because this is a new fund and people have got to be starting to, you know, get prepared to put the money out the door, start getting the application process that they're going to be using for those, which are competitive grants and the like. And as long as the funding or the repayment is within the biennium, it's kind of an in and out type of thing. I think if it went across the biennium, we might have more of a problem. And that's something we're going to have to look at as well as we go forward. Not only is there have we not overspent a fund, but we haven't overcommitted a fund as far as being able to cash flow its obligations as well. So.
And I would think particularly if they're making decisions about acquisitions, that, you know, if you end up signing a contract and you can't get out of it or something. I mean, I just think, given the fact we have no track record here of cash flow, that I would think we've got to lean over backwards to be cautious in a year when we have no money.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. This brings up an interesting thing that maybe Mr. McCormick can look at more into, or others, about whether there's precedence or whether we, or, you know, we ought to look into a cash flow management plan for this. I mean, we're told that we may, as a state, go into cash flow short-term borrowing for the first time in at least a couple of decades. And, you know, rather than paying interest and then having to cut other things even more, if we can structure how each of these funds manages its cash flow such that it can actually help solve some of those problems rather than contribute to them, I think that would be a real advantage. And since now we're getting lots of entities across the state of Minnesota potentially dependent upon these resources, and it's one of our more volatile sources of funds, you know, should we be building in some contingency language that talks about how we adjust if, I mean, if we can lose $20 million in sales tax in 1 month,
you know, we can go, I mean, there's a lot, it is an up and down sort of revenue source, and whether or not we have thought enough about, in these unpredictable times, if we've got enough of a cushion, a reserve, a contingency plan for how do you handle who gets paid out first versus second, you know, some of those kinds of things. I think we might want to look at that anyhow, and I'm sure there's ways to manage it, but I just don't know how they've been used in other special funds.
Thank you,
Representative
Lawford. Representative Lawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other financial questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Seibert, I just wanted to confirm $20 million below the November forecast. So the forecast that came out, we are $20 million below that for November.
For the November receipt. But I want people to understand that it's not unusual that you'll see fluctuations between the forecast and actual revenues on it. On a monthly basis, it happens. The real issue is what is that? Is there any trend that they will see over a quarter or longer? So I just bring that to your attention because I think the committee, as well as probably the legislature as a whole, has to kind of think about where this is all going. But I don't want you to become over concerned about it. I just mention that. Because there is a potential that we are going to be facing some issues that with these funds, that where things had gone according to plan or forecast, the original, you know, back in the early forecast and the session, you would have probably had to face.
Madam Chair,
Representative Hansen.
The reason it's important is we have set aside in the Outdoor Heritage Fund 10% reserve last time, and we're losing, it appears, than $2 million every forecast. So the carry forward is going to be less than we anticipated. Last week, the council took action for recommendations, which we'll make tomorrow, to have a 5% reserve on recommendations to legislature for this year. Assuming that there would be 10% carried forward, but that number is dropping. The information that you just provided, we didn't have during that discussion. And I think this then gets to Representative Hausman's concern is how do we manage cash flow in this initial startup if we have disappearing revenue on the sales tax. The sales tax is not the income tax. So, is there a way to get some? I mean, is that going to be on revenue's webpage soon, the November data, in terms of is it that $20 million you're seeing is income tax and sales tax and all the other taxes down? So, is the sales tax revenue stable?
Oh, Madam Chair, actually, the $20 million is the sales tax.
Is the sales
tax? Yeah. That is not. That does not equate to any of the other major tax sources. I think the actual for the numbers, you know, the in and outs of all the funds were far less than the $20 million, but the outstander was the sales tax. I mean, it was by far the one that was the farthest up. But like I said again, I just make mention of it because it's something that we're aware of that just happened. But it could be that December will be higher. Maybe some people move their purchases into the next month. Because this is, you know, I mean, this is, as they say in the retail business, this is the make and break time of the thing. And for the sales tax, of course, since it's so heavily reliant on people spending, that will be the one that will be impacted based on what people do. But yes, we are looking at different numbers than what we did before. Yeah.
Any other questions about finance? Okay. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, which is a brief update on the framework planning. And Andrea Squire and Stanley Romanstein from the Humanities commission and the attire is from the Historical Society. It's going to tell us about the arts and cultural heritage framework that they're going to develop because they can cross the state listening. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, my name is Stanley Romanstein. I'm president of the Minnesota Humanities Center. I'm joined at the table by my colleague Andrea Kyer, deputy director of the Minnesota Historical Society. Sue Jans, executive director of the Minnesota State Arts Board, had wanted to be here today, but she is traveling. She's in Rochester on State Arts Board business, so she sends her regrets. She has reviewed the testimony that Ms. Kyer and I will offer this afternoon, and she lends her voice to the comments that we're about to make. Just for review, in the 2009 session, the legislature charged the three organizations we represent, the Minnesota Historical Society, the Minnesota State Arts Board, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with leading, quote, a collaborative project to develop a 10-year plan and a 25-year framework for the use of the money available in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund under the Minnesota Constitution, Article 11, Section 15. To fulfill that mandate, the legislature directed that we enlist representatives from the breadth of the state's arts, history, and cultural heritage community, and specifically, the legislature asked that we include representatives from an arts organization serving youth, an arts organization serving adults, a civic education organization, local and regional historical organizations, Minnesota zoos, children's museums, libraries, public radio and television, and the Science Museum of Minnesota. In response, this past September, our three organizations extended a broad invitation, an invitation carried by letter, via email, through publication in the State Register, and through our partnerships with the Council, with the Indian Affairs Council, the Council on Black Minnesotans, the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and the Council on the Affairs of Chicano Latino Minnesotans, an invitation for those organizations and for individuals throughout the state to nominate qualified people to work with us in developing that 10-year plan and 25-year framework. Through this open nominations process, we created what I think is a superb work group of 13 individuals. Peggy Adelman from the Minnesota Zoo, Jennifer Bloom, the Civics Minnesota Coalition, Michael Garcia, Duluth Children's Museum, Alan Harmon, Duluth Superior Area Educational Television, Andrea Kyer with the Minnesota Historical Society, Pat Molso, Freeborn County Historical Society, Jeff Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio, David O'Fallon, McPhail Center for Music, Rebecca Peterson from the Fergus Falls Center for the Arts, Brenda Rainey from the Science Museum of Minnesota, Mark Ranum from the Plum Creek Library System, Pam Perry Weaver from the Minnesota State Arts Board, and I am the 13th member of the group. As you may note, the committee represents both Greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities metropolitan area, organizations both large and small. The members of this group have worked together extremely well and without compensation of any kind. I think they deserve the state's thanks, and I hope you'll extend it to them when this process is done. To date, the committee has met twice, once in St. Paul, October 21st, and again in Little Falls on November the 10th. We have two additional meetings scheduled, one this Friday in Minneapolis, and a final meeting on January 5th in St. Cloud. We anticipate being able to deliver our recommendations to the legislature by January 15, 2010, as the legislature requested that we do. To facilitate the group's work, we engaged Bill Spreluga and Peter Brown of WJS Consulting Group based here in St. Paul. In addition to leading the work of the planning group, Mr. Spreluga and Mr. Brown facilitated six public listening sessions held around the state, and Ms. Kyer will speak about those sessions.
Ms. Kyer. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Andrea Kyer. I'm Deputy Director from the Minnesota Historical Society. I'd also like to acknowledge Pam Perry Weaver, one of our committee members, is in the audience today from the State Arts Board. We conducted six listening sessions throughout the state of Minnesota. These included, these were held in St. Paul, Chisholm, Fergus Falls, Rochester, Minneapolis, and Marshall, Minnesota. The committee members do attend the listening sessions. We estimated we had over 400 participants at those listening sessions throughout the state.
Along with the listening sessions, we also solicit comments on a dedicated website, ACHF, our cultural heritage fund, achfminnesota.org. That is where all of our information of this planning committee is placed for the public to view and comment on. We also had a Facebook page, LinkedIn, and Twitter for any of you social media experts out there to place comments or to view our key findings. We had over 3,000 hits on these websites, and a number of them also through links through the State Arts Board, through our linking with the different websites came in. The Plan Committee, as Stanley said, has met twice. We were to meet again, but we had the snowstorm, so we are now rescheduled for this Friday. And then we'll be having our final meeting January 5th in St. Cloud to review the final document that we intend to submit on or before January 15th to your committee. Our goal was to be open and transparent throughout this process, and we feel that we have achieved that goal. So, Madam Chair, that concludes my testimony, and we will be back to you January 15th.
Good. Comments? Questions? Thank you very much. Parks and Trails Framework, Cortland Nelson from PNR and Mary Vogel from the University of Minnesota. And I believe the handout map is for this presentation.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to report today. We have progress on several fronts with regards to our plan. I am Cortland Nelson, Director of DNR Parks and Trails, by the way. I wanted to mention quickly several items that we are working on, and then Mary will complement those and add a great deal of information to the coordination activities we have with the University of Minnesota, and then we can answer any questions that you might have. By way of review, the three primary components, if you were to distill down the activities that you assigned to us jointly, would be the work with the University of Minnesota and their inventory and framework, the work on the 10-year and the 25-year planning process for the use of the legacy funds, and then the 10-year strategic plan for DNR Parks and Trails. I'm going to cover those second and third items. The 10-25 legacy plan is moving along very well. The commissioner appointed a steering committee that essentially was to create the process for moving ahead. And we have been very successful with our group. We have representatives from the Met Council, Explore Minnesota Tourism, three metropolitan park districts, and four rural Minnesota park districts. They are not intended to be having answers. They are intended to create a process whereby we can get involvement and activity and commitments and comments by the citizens and the special interest groups of Minnesota. That group has met four times around the state. We have our next meeting in Dakota County in January. We also have given presentations to the Minnesota Recreation and Parks Association, the Parks and Trails Council Board, the annual State County Commissioners Lands Meeting, the Met Council, implementing agencies meeting, and by that I mean the parks and recreation professionals within the Met Council, Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails, and a number of interested groups that have come forward, and we've had conversations with them. We will greatly expand that contact list as we move ahead. I would also want to mention that we came to an agreement on Friday in hiring a consultant whose primary responsibility will be the public participation process of this. This is an independent company who will come in and fill in many of the details about the very questions that you asked in the bill. How do we connect with youth? How do we get the involvement with organizations that are not typical in their involvement with the future of parks and trails as per laid out by the legislation. What are some issues with regards to data collection and the compiling of information that we would want to have available for our long-term effort here? What are some new tools in the public participation toolbox that we should be looking at? How can we improve the website? These are the things that we're bringing on board this consultant who can help us and really take that lead in presenting the most clear and fair and balanced report to you when, as we move through both our draft reports and the final report in January, February of 2011. Maybe I would take a break and turn it over to Mary, and you can bring the group up to speed on the University of Minnesota.
Ms. Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I am Mary Vogel, co-chair of the Center for Changing Landscapes, University of Minnesota College of Design and College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Sciences. We were asked by the legislature to conduct an inventory and framework, which will provide a resource for the kinds of decision planning that Cortland has referred to. Just as a starter, I just want to go through a little bit about how we're what the inventory and framework is for parks and trails, and then give you an update on our progress. The inventory will consist both of maps and a text. It will address both the physical and experiential dimensions of natural resource-based parks and trails. It will have a series of county-based GIS, that's Geographic Information System, maps with text that can be aggregated. These maps will describe what's on the ground, what is planned, and what is proposed. It will also consist of an analysis of recreational experiences based on existing recreational studies that detail recreation experiences, preferences, and constraints. These will include recreation trends, both current uses and changes in those uses, and demographic conditions and projections. The inventory is being compiled from maps, plans, and studies gathered from federal, state, regional, county, and city governments. The analysis of the survey studies have been primarily received from the DNR studies that have been done in the past, but there are some local studies that are also involved. Now, the framework is a graphic and written description of the opportunities to strengthen the existing parks and trail network in Minnesota and address unmet needs identified in the inventory. It will respond to the information gathered by the DNR-led public outreach effort, which you just heard about from Cortland. The framework will include enhancements to existing parks and trails, completing existing assets, linking existing parks and trails, and creating new ones. So the Minnesota Parks and Trails Project products will include this inventory, a framework, and we're also creating a file on each county that can be used by anybody to really make decisions in the future. The materials, and it will also include materials for the DNR and Explore Minnesota website. We are partnering with DNR, Explore Minnesota, and the Metropolitan Council as requested by the legislation. And I'd like to just now give you an update on our progress. In addition to establishing a strong working relationship with DNR, Explore Minnesota, Tourism, and Metro Council, we're pursuing a relationship with that hasn't been consummated yet with MnDOT. We feel this is also very important. We have weekly conference calls and meetings with DNR. We've participated in DNR steering committee meetings, and we have meetings, we call meetings to to identify and address issues as they come up. And it, so far it's been working very, very well. We are completing right now the base map for all 87 counties. We have handed out for you a sample of that base map, and I'd be glad to answer any questions about the content of those maps. We have worked with DNR, the Metro Council, and Explore Minnesota Tourism to develop a GIS strategy so that we will make a tool that is compatible and usable by all. We have also worked to agree upon an attribute list that will be part of the inventory. The attributes that will be needed by the for decision makers as they make the plan, and useful information that tourists can use when the information is transformed into the public website. And we've also established a graphic protocol so that everybody agrees what a red line means and what a dashed line means, etc. We're working on some statewide maps also that will provide some information about demographics, including density, minority population, age trends, etc. We've contacted counties and cities, and the data is pouring in. We have organized our work along DNR regions, not just so that this isn't a this is just an organizational strategy, and you can see in the map that we distributed what those four regions are so that you can ask us questions. We started with the northern Minnesota, so we've completed the base materials for regions 1 and 2, and are starting to put the proposed, the new information on the list, and are working on region 3 and 4 right now. We have left Metro Council to be the last because they have the most complete set of data and the most organized and is the least challenging in terms of just getting this basic information together, which was agreed upon by the Metropolitan Council. Mm-hmm. We have been working on the recreation experience inventory. We're completing regional profiles based on the demographic and recreational trends, including recreational facilities, activities, experiences, and constraints. And like the physical inventory, the recreation experience inventory began with Region 1, and the inventories will be completed by the end of next month. As far as the framework is concerned, we have not started the framework. The material developed in the inventory will inform the framework. And the website, the materials developed in the inventory and the framework will be useful in further developing the web materials. We have participated in all the meetings that you heard from Cortland, and have a heavy schedule of additional meetings planned in January and February. And so Cortland maybe wants, if you have any questions about this particular handout we handed out, let me just point out this is the base map that we are developing. On the cover you see a number of communities identified as regional centers. Because we are interested in both parks and trails that are of both regional and statewide significance, we did look at the kind of demographic information that you see on the back to determine what we could define as regional centers for the purpose of our analysis. If you are familiar with the state parks and trails map, they will give the miles from the metropolitan area, and since we are addressing regional needs, we wanted to have a different definition so that we could give them the miles from Bemidji, the miles from Marshall, et cetera, in some of the analyses that we're doing when as we address the issue of access. So, with that, Hartland.
Thank you. Madam Chair, let me quickly conclude and then we'd be glad to answer any questions. The next time we speak to your committee, we will have laid out a series of very clear public participation steps, both locations and the tools and the toolbox that we're going to use in terms of our consultants' recommendations and what we would want to do as the DNR and our partners in this field. We see a number of meetings around the state that we would be having, and when I say meeting, that's not really accurate, a day of activities where one of us might be on the local radio station, one of us might be speaking to the chamber, another one might be speaking with a professional organization that's meeting that day, and then some type of a public involvement meeting at a public place that we would prepare for and spawn and stimulate attendees and get them to answer the very questions that you have challenged us with. We are very anxious to lay out a framework. It has been difficult for us to go slower because we want to make sure that we cover all of our bases and don't miss anything. We also need to be laying out in front of you what we are going to do by way of our special interest groups, those people who either locally or statewide have a vested interest in the outcome of this activity. The commissioner's office is encouraging us to look at some type of a major event where we would invite in those individuals who are representative of the special interest groups and the various NGOs that we have. We will work on that particular product. We have also some opportunities and challenges in the metropolitan area. As Mary alluded to, we are planned deep in the metropolitan area, but how do we get good involvement with the 3-point-something million citizens who reside in that area? And that's another issue that we're going to ask our consultants as well as our participants on our steering committee to help us delve into that. My last point, I think you'll be pleased to know that we have our first round of grants, our legacy grants that have been received. For the Parks and Trails Legacy Grant, we will be analyzing those applications, and we hope by mid-January that the first grant will be awarded. Anticipating one of your questions, in the we broke the grants into two types, trail grants and park grants. And these, for those of you who may not remember, were for the regional parks around the state. That's what they were developed for. And we have, in the trail grants, we have 57 applications. The total of those requests was $14.6 million. For the park grant, we have 21 applications for $15.8 million. And in the aggregate, there were 78 applications for $30 million. We have $3.38 million available, so about a 10-to-1 ratio.